I appreciated Brother William's message. And my wife got a blessing from that, where he said, you need to get back to what you got married for. She leaned over and said, I want your money. I preached for him he's on the South Island. There's two islands in New Zealand. He's on the South Island, very northern tip of the South Island. He's got a tremendous church and a tremendous teen department. I wish your teens here could meet his. They're just great kids. I love being with them. We published two of his books. He's got one that is a workbook format. It is called In Spirit and in Truth. And if you're looking for something to deal with charismatics, that is the book. And then the second one, I almost hate to tell you what it is. It's a commentary on the Song of Solomon. He said he didn't like to teach that book. Don't worry, it's only 3 pages long. But anyway, but he is. He's done a tremendous work over there. I've gone over there and tried to split his church several times. It's never worked. Open your Bibles to James. Open them to James chapter 1. I'm not preaching now. That I just want to see if it's in your version. Let me answer the same question. Since I got here, I've been asked this question probably 5 or 6 times, and folks have been asking how my neck is. My neck is good. I mean, it is good. It was July, right about the week of this meeting, July of 08, that the doc literally cut my throat. We paid for that operation. We raffled off the opportunity to cut my throat. And that doctor told me, he said, I'll get rid of 50% of your pain. I'm fused from C4 to C7, and I would say he got rid of about 70%. So I am my hands are fine, my arms are fine, and I want to thank you. Now let me tell you what worries me about that surgery. In fact, I was telling somebody before church. I now they took C5 out, ground it up, put it in there, and they screwed a titanium plate there. I said I now have medical proof that my head is screwed on straight, but. Because there have been some doubters, okay? Been some doubters. But let me tell you what scares me the most and has scared me about that surgery, and that is this. You folks and folks like you have been very, very faithful to pray for Kathy and I being on the road and such. And I told Kathy, I said, I hope people don't say, well, he's okay now, we can quit praying. Because ironically, the most difficult year we ever had on the road was 2009, the year after the surgery. I mean, so bad that we just about folded up the tent because my poor wife and I couldn't take anymore. And God spared us; He did. Didn't spare you; kept us on the road. But I will tell you this: she went to the chiropractor yesterday. 24 years on the road has really beat her spine and neck. So we'll always take your prayers. Okay. I'm not after your money. I'm not after your money. I've seen your money. but I will shamelessly go after any prayer I can get. And if you'll pray for Kathy and pray for me, or just look at me, that will help you pray for Kathy. But if you'll pray for us. But I just wanted you to know that I'm doing good. I am doing very, very good. I was up in the Arctic in June of 09. Was it 09 this year? It was 09. And I slipped on some snow. That's the Arctic. And I slipped on some snow, went flat on my back, hit the step with the back of my head. And I thought, well, we'll find out how good that surgery is. And I never even got a headache. So I am praising the Lord. And much of the success of that surgery, not just keeping us going, until I had the surgery, but much, I think, of the success of that surgery is because you guys prayed that it would be successful. So I don't ever want you to think that your prayers are not appreciated, but I also don't want you to think that they are no longer desired or needed, because we'll take anything we can get. Well, all right, James chapter 1. James chapter 1, sometimes when we preachers preach, you are not interested in what we're going to say. I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean that it may not apply. The message you just heard will always apply. The message you heard from Brother Williams will always apply. I was at a preacher's conference. 3 preachers got up. I was preaching. It just wasn't my day to preach. And 3 preachers got up to preach. The first one got up, and it was a pastor's conference. And he talked about how to secure a building. you know, how a church gets a building, which was very informative, very needed for the pastors, but I, as an evangelist, didn't need it. We just go by a campground, find an idling RV, and take off. Which is why we're a different place every week, okay? And then the second one was how to get a second man. Be honest, I'm not looking for my first. And so, I didn't need that one. And then the third one was how to raise your kids. And we have three boys. They're already all grown and out of the house and in prison. So, I never hear a message on how to raise children that I don't get depressed. I mean, some guy gets up and tells you how to raise kids. I go, oh man, no wonder they're like that. I didn't do what he said. What I'm saying, though, is that the three subjects, they were needed for people that were there, but they weren't needed for me because our kids were already grown. I didn't need a building, and I already told you about the other part. But you heard a message tonight already that will always apply, correct? And what I'm going to talk to you about tonight will apply. I know it will apply. Look what it says, James chapter 1, look at verse 12, blessed is the man that endureth temptation. For when he is tried, he's received the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them that love him. Let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Now, I'm sure some of you have heard this before. I'm talking to some gray hairs here. Some of you guys remember the days of LSD? Okay, well, God's LSD is found in verse 15. Then when L, lust, hath conceived, it bringeth forth S, sin, and sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth D, death. Let's bow our heads, let's talk to the Lord. Father, it is just good to be saved. It really is. And Lord God, thank you that we could be in church. It is always good to be in this church. It is always, Father, we always look forward to seeing Brother Carlson, Father, and the people of this church and folks that come in to this meeting from all points, Canada and other places. Thank you, God, that we could be here. Thank you that all of us could be here tonight and free. Thank you, Father, for the message that we heard. I ask you now, Lord God, please, you know all of the things about me that would prevent your message from being delivered tonight. What I'm going to ask you on behalf of these people and for your sake, would you get all of those things out of your way? Set Sam Gipp aside so that it not be a obstacle to you or a problem to these folks. And give them something, Lord, that may help them and maybe save them a lot of grief. In Jesus Christ's name we pray, amen. Now we'll talk to you. It says there in verse 12, blessed is a man that endureth temptation. For when he is tried, he shall receive a crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them that love him. I am going to talk to you about temptation. I'm going to talk to you about, it's not a how-to lesson, don't worry. Nobody needs any help on how to be tempted. But I'm going to talk to you about temptation, and I'm going to talk to you about how to deal with it. Now, surely you have heard this. We hear this frequently. Unfortunately, we hear it about preachers. You ever hear anybody say this about another Christian or about a preacher? They said, oh, did you hear about so-and-so? They fell into sin. You ever hear that? Nobody falls into sin. Nobody falls into sin. Have you ever fallen into anything? I mean, really, have you ever fallen into something? I saw this video clip. This video clip was taken in like a 7-Eleven store or a convenience store. It's a security camera of the very back room, and the only way to get into the basement of this back room is through a trap door in the floor. You open up this trap door and go down a flight of steps. And in this film, here's what you see: the camera's right there, and there's a lady working here, and the trap door is behind her, and it's down and it's closed. But while she is doing this, some guy goes down the basement. He opens up the trap door and goes down the basement. And she's doing like this, and she goes, and I mean, she leaves the picture. She fell. I mean, she fell in there, all right? Nobody falls into sin. You have fallen. You're falling into something. Look, here's what I'm telling you. No two people, nobody ever walked down the street and said, you know, I was doing just fine, and next thing I knew, I walked out of a bar drunk. How did that happen? Nobody fell into, you don't fall into a bar. Whoa, I fell into a bar and a beer fell into my hand and it fell down my throat and then I fell in the street. Nobody falls into sin. You don't ever hear anybody saying, I was walking down the street and another lady, a stranger, was walking past me and the next thing I knew, we were in a motel room. You understand? Nobody falls into sin. But let me tell you what you do. You fall into temptation. In other words, you can be minding your own business and suddenly be tempted. You weren't looking for it. You weren't planning for it. You were minding your own business. We flew in today. We fly a lot. And I was flying someplace. I think it might have been just earlier this year or last year. I'm flying alone. Kathy is somewhere. I think she was at the Vegas at the World Series of Poker. And we tithe it. Anyway, I'm sitting at the gate, and this lady gets up to and walks away. She was sitting at the gate about two seats over, and she got up and walked away. And I don't know where she had this, but she had some money folded up. And wherever she had it, it wasn't secure, because when she stood up to walk away, it fell on the floor, and she walked away from it. Well, man, she's walking away. You got to be fast, you know. So I quickly jumped up and I went, Romans 8:28. No, that's not what I did. I called her. I said, ma'am. She turned around and said, you dropped something. I'm minding my own business. And like that, all of a sudden, I'm tempted to steal somebody's money. Don't say to her, well, I wouldn't be tempted. You're right. You've been stealing from God, some of you. Surely you would steal from a human. And so here's what I'm going to talk to you about. I'm going to talk to you about how to deal with temptation. Because you can fall into temptation. What I'm saying is that you never know. You never know when you are going to find yourself tempted. And I will tell you how to take care of it. I want you to go with me, if you will, back to Matthew chapter 6. And it's a strange thing about Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6 has the famous prayer that the Lord taught the disciples. It is called by the world the Lord's Prayer. It is called by us the disciples' prayer. It is really the disciples' prayer. The Lord didn't pray this. His prayer is found in John chapter 17. But this is the Lord teaching his disciples how to pray. Now here's a strange thing. I was raised Roman Catholic. And I had, I said this prayer. I mean, I had it committed to memory, you know. Our Father which art in heaven, we'll go through that. And then I had those Catholic prayers. You know, Hail Mary and Angel of God and Act of Contrition and all of this stuff. Now, those were just the trumped up words of man. Do you understand? In fact, when I was a Roman Catholic, you may not know this, but if you were Roman Catholic, you did this. When I was a Roman Catholic, I prayed in tongues. Now, I know some of you think that Catholics don't speak in tongues. Well, they don't speak in tongues, but they pray in tongues. And if you don't think that Catholics pray in tongues, just go into a Catholic church on a Saturday afternoon and listen to one say 50 Hail Marys in 2 minutes. Because when he comes out of that phone booth, that guy dressed like mother called himself father, and that guy with the gown on says, go say 50 Hail Marys, nobody walks out of there and goes, Hail Mary, full of grace. The Lord is with you. Oh, man, this guy's got a party to go to. So he prays in tongues. Hail Mary, full of grace. Holy Mary, full of grace. Hail Mary, full of grace. Holy Mary, full of grace. Hail Mary, full of grace. You say, that's not what it sounds like. Go and check. I can tell you, that's exactly what it sounds like. I can just see the Lord up in heaven going, whoa, what is he saying? Mom, he's talking to you. But, but I repeated some vain, repetitious words of man. Well, when I got saved, I was told that my Roman Catholic prayers were no good. You know why? Because they were no good. Why am I praying to an angel of God? Why would I be praying to the mother of the Lord? Why would I be doing it? But I got told that this was bad. This Our Father which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Somebody said, well, you can't pray that anymore. So why not? They said, that's vain repetition. Could I ask you two questions? Number one, how could the words that come out of the mouth of God be vain? I mean, didn't Jesus Christ, here's Jesus Christ telling his disciples, here's how you pray, and when he gets done, an independent Baptist preacher stands up and says, well, that was vain, don't ever say that. I don't think the words of God in the flesh can be vain. Now, I know what you're going to say. Yeah, but you just say them and you don't mean them. Wait a second. Am I talking to anybody here? You've been praying for some lost family member for 10, 15, 20, 25 years and they haven't gotten saved yet, right? Well, it sounds like repetition, and if they haven't gotten saved, it sounds like it's vain, and I'll bet you're not going to quit. So here is the Lord. I call this an economy of words. This is the Lord saying so many tremendous things in so few words. Look what he says. We're going to review a couple of things, and we'll get to the part of it that I want you to see. He says this in verse 8. Matthew chapter 6, verse 8. Verse 9. After this manner, therefore, pray ye, our Father, which art in heaven. I'm impressed with this God. I'm impressed. I'm impressed with the creator of the universe. You know why? Because I am what you are. You and I are nothing but a walking, talking piece of dirt. Isn't that true? Now, let me tell you about this creator. This creator can pile dirt up and breathe into its nostrils the breath of life. And it doesn't get life. It becomes a living soul. A dog has life. A dog does not have it is not a living soul. Do you understand? So when God breathed into the nostrils of a pile of dirt, it just didn't become alive, man. It wasn't Pinocchio. It just he got a life, but he never became a soul. Do you understand? I mean, this piece of dirt became a living soul. Now, forgive me for using this word, but I'm just going to say it because it just kind of describes it best. Pretty good trick, wouldn't you say? Pretty impressive, wouldn't you say? I mean, if God stopped there, wouldn't that be enough? But God didn't stop there. He breathed into our nostrils the breath of life and we became a living soul. Then this creator went back to heaven and got the only son that he had and had him come down here and die so that this piece of dirt right here talking to you. As I speak to you, you know what I'm doing? I am on my way to heaven. I am destined to spend eternity. A piece of dirt is going to spend eternity in heaven with its creator. Pretty good? Good enough for me, not good enough for God. If God had stopped there, it was enough for me. But let me tell you, when you and I got saved, during that what I call that divine transaction, you got down on your knees, according to John chapter 8, verse 44, you got down on your knees as son of the devil, and when you got off your knees, you got off your knees as a son of God. And so now, let me tell you what this piece of dirt does. This piece of dirt, every single day, addresses its creator, and you know what? Now look, what could I call him? What could I call God? I could call him God. I could call him creator. I could call him almighty. I could call him Lord. I could call him master. Could I not call him any one of those? I could call him wonderful. I could call him counselor. Aren't there just a raft of names that I could call God when I pray, and they'd all be accurate? But you know what I call him? A piece of dirt addresses its creator, and I say, Father. And it is true. How can you not be impressed with this God? Our Father which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. You know, he is teaching his disciples a format for prayer. If you don't want to use these exact words, try the format. Here's what I mean. When's the last time you started your prayer by saying something good about God? Most of you did not. Because most of you, really, you said you were talking to God, but you're looking for Santa Claus. Because you've got a list of things and you want God to take care of it. I mean, you're looking for somebody in a big red suit with a white beard. You're not looking for anybody with nail holes in his hands. Well, preacher, you know, I don't want to say something to flatter him. You know, I've always thought sometimes that flatter is a compliment beyond reason. Could I ask you a question? What can you say good about God that his reaction will be? Well, that's a little over the top. Well, I'm not all that. Man, he is worthy of anything we call him that's good. Isn't that true? Our Father which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, and thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. Hey, let me ask you this, guys. When is the last time you ever went to God in prayer? Because you're going to ask him for something. When's the last time you ever went to God and said, I hope you get what you want? Most of us only ever go into the presence of God because we want to get what we want. Isn't that true? That's why you're praying in the first place. You've got your Christmas list. You've got your grocery list. You've got the things God's supposed to do for you today. And so we go into his presence and all we say is, God, do this. But that is not how the Lord taught us to pray. He said, I hope you get what you want. Now, let me ask you this. I think I know the answer to this. Am I talking to a group of people here? I don't mean just as a group, though. I'm talking about as individuals. Am I talking to a group of individuals who, before you eat, you bow your head and ask and thank God for your food? Do you do that? Good. Now let me ask you this. All of you who thank Him for your food, do you ask Him for it? Look at verse 11. Give us this day our daily bread. You know, Canada is very much like the United States in one respect. Don't take that as an insult. But it's very much like the United States in one respect. Canadians and Americans don't realize that 85% of this world wakes up every day wondering two things. How am I going to get food and how am I going to keep it? I will tell you there are four reasons why you people never ask God for your food. You know what they are? Your refrigerator, your freezer, your pantry, and your grocery stores. I've not been in your homes, but I'll bet you've got a refrigerator, a freezer, a pantry, and somewhere between here and your house, you will go past a grocery store. That's kind of tough for a Baptist, but you will go past a grocery store. I'll bet you this. I haven't been in your home, but I'll bet you've got more food than you can eat in one day. That's pretty impressive for a Baptist. And if your refrigerator and your freezer and your pantry get a little bit low, you're not going to ask God to fill them. What are you going to do? You're going to go to the grocery store and restock. Isn't that true? But you know, if this worldwide recession really takes a plunge, and if the United States and Canada and the Western world all of a sudden find ourselves on the downward slope of an abyss, you know one of the first things that's going to happen? Empty grocery store shelves. Empty grocery store shelves, you know what that's going to mean? That means eventually you're going to have a refrigerator and a freezer and a pantry that are going to start to wane on their stock. Am I right, 35 million people? Canada? 35 million? When your grocery stores are empty and your refrigerator and your freezer and your pantry, when those start getting low, I'll bet you're going to ask God for your food. Right? Don't you think you're going to have that idea about the same time 35 million other people are going to have the idea? And I'll tell you, I don't know about you, but I hate lines. I do. I hate lines. Man, hey, I'm going to come to Canada and pray because we got 300 million. So I'm going to pray in Canada because the line is a lot shorter. But you know what I do? Look, we have a motorhome. We haven't had a house in 24 years. We have a motorhome. It has somewhat of a refrigerator. It has a little bit of a freezer. It does not have a pantry. There's no place put there to put canned goods and stuff. So we put them, you know, like in my suit coat pockets But you know, I don't trust the refrigerator, and I don't trust the freezer, and I don't trust the pantry, and I don't trust the grocery stores. You know what I do? I ask God every day, please give us this day our daily bread. I pray that prayer right there every day. Please don't tell me. Don't come and tell me the words of the Lord are vain. I ask God every day for my food. Stop and think about this, guys. Now look, I suggest, if it's give us this day our what? Daily bread, then He must be thinking you should pray this every day. Right? Almost like you should repeat it. Anyway, it's only vain if you don't get the food. But guys, you know what I do every day? I ask God, please, please give us this day our daily bread. Stop and think about this, you Baptist. If you ask God for your food every morning, then wouldn't every prayer every meal you had that day be an answer prayer? Man, you could have like 4, 5, 6 prayers a day answered. I bet I got somebody sitting here right now going, man, God never answers my prayer. Well, tomorrow morning, ask Him to give you food and see if He answers it. All right, I'm serious. And forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. Look what it says in verse 13. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. He told us to pray every day, please don't lead me into temptation. Here's what I tell people about temptation. Temptation is like a magnet. It has a sphere of influence. We've all done this at some point. You take a piece of, well, we used to take typing paper, but you can't find that anymore, so we get copier paper. And you get this piece of copier paper, and you sprinkle metal filings on the top of it, and dead center underneath it, you put a magnet. When you put that magnet right under the center of that piece of paper, the metal filings that are above there do three, not two, but three things. The metal filings that are within the sphere of influence of the pull of that magnet, you know what they do? Whoop! I mean, they just all stand right up, right over top of the magnet. You ever see it done? And then the metal filings that are outside the sphere of influence of that magnet, you know what they do? They're laying there like they're on the beach, like they don't even know there's a magnet around. But right at the edge, they're not out there laying down, but they're not on above the magnet. You know what? You got a bunch of metal filings going like this. You say, what are they? Tempted. That is exactly true. The ones that are over the top of the magnet gave in to temptation. The ones out there laying around doing nothing don't even care. They are not influenced by that magnet. But these are not sure they want to stay here or plunge. So here's what you need to do. Guys, you need to ask God every day, according to the Lord. You need to ask God. Start your day by saying, please lead me not into temptation. I've had people say some things, and Christians are good at saying dumb things. And I had somebody say, well, you know, I want to get tempted so that I can get stronger against it. You can't. It's impossible. Because the very word is temptation. Right? Then if you put yourself in the way of temptation, you are tempted to do something. You can't get not tempted. You know, here's what I'm saying. You can exercise your faith and build it stronger. You don't exercise temptation and get resistance to it. I'll tell you what happened. Kathy and I got married between my second and third year of Bible college. And we went down to Bible college. And I can remember one day I got out of the car and I closed the door and I heard something go thunk. And I want you to know that the exhaust system on my car was in perfect condition. I could tell because it was laying on the ground. And we were, you know, I was a college student, you know, third year school, no money. I mean, we licked rocks for vitamins. And so, but we're saving up money for next month's rent. So what I did is I took some of next month's rent money and here's what I prayed. I said, God, your car is broke and I'm going to fix it for you. Keep that in mind. And so, I fixed God's car. I loaned him some money. And then my wife got sick and had to go to the doctor. And I didn't have any money for the doctor. So out of next month's rent came some more money for the doctor. And then I got sick. And you know how men are, they don't go to the doctor. But when a man goes to the doctor, he's sick. Man, I was sick. And I went to the doctor. And we had these bills coming in. We trust the Lord to take care of us, but we had these bills coming in that were unexpected. But I'll tell you what else happened. Almost simultaneously with these bills coming in that we weren't expecting, money began to come in. I'd go to church and somebody would walk up and say, here's $5. This happened in October. We just went down at the end of August, early September. This happened in October. In October, one of my wife's sisters sent a letter, and in that letter was a $10 bill, and she said this, I was going to send this to you at Christmas, but the Lord told me to send it now. So one day we're walking through the grocery stores. Not that we had money, but we're Baptists. We can at least lust after groceries. I mean, if you don't have any money, man, you just walk down the aisles and go, whoa, cereal. And so we're walking through the grocery store, and I had an idea, and it's so rare that I have to act on it immediately. And I said, Kathy, I said, add these figures up. And I gave her the cost of repairing the car, her doctor bill, my doctor bill, some other things came up. I gave her our unexpected bills, and she said, $52. I said, okay. I said, now add these figures up. And I gave her the $10 that her sister sent and $5 somebody gave us at the church and $2 here and a dollar here, whatever. And she looked over at me. I mean, her eyes were this big and she went, $52. $52 in bills came in unexpectedly. $52 in cash came in unexpectedly. Now, you may be impressed with that. I was not. As soon as she told me $52 had come in, just between me and the Lord, I didn't say anything, but I said, okay, you owe me $5 more. Because I believe in tithing. And that 52, I can eat 20 cents. I've tithed $5. So I'm expecting $5 more. I really did. I told the Lord, I said, I tithed that 52, so you have not paid my bills yet. And that was on Saturday. I came back home from work on Monday. And when I got to the door, Kathy met me there. She's all smiling. She says, guess what we got in the mail today? I said, $5 more. She said, how'd you know? That is the truth. Now, here's what we were. We were a young married couple. And you know what we had to have? $52 faith. You know, I feel bad for young married couples today. Because they start out with like $70 million faith. You talk to somebody that's getting married, well, we're going by the apartment. They're just laying the carpet and bringing the new washer and the new dryer. And they're going to bring all of the new furniture. I mean, some of these people, they're divorced before they pay for the wedding. Really. Some people, just from their wedding alone, they're $25,000 in debt. That is not faith. You don't get married with $25,000 faith. You get married with $25 faith. Now, go fast forward about 30 years into the future. Amongst the things I wrote these lessons for grades 11 and grades 12 in our country. I guess you guys go to 12 years in your school? Okay. Ours does too. I personally went 13. But I really like that grade. And here's what it was. It was to help your children before they went to a quote-unquote King James Bible-believing Bible college and lost their faith in the book. You know, some of you're going to send your child off to a college, and you're going to call the school and talk to the head man saying, are you King James? Oh, yeah, we're KJV here. Well, we're King James. Oh, yeah, you can send your child here. We believe that old KJV. And then as soon as they hang up, you know what they're going to say? We'll straighten that kid out when he gets here. And you'll send your child to this King James Bible-believing Bible college. And after he gets to this King James Bible-believing Bible college, he'll hear that King James is homosexual, the italics need to be taken out of the Bible, the archaic words need to be updated, and Easter doesn't belong there. And they'll lose their faith. So I said, you know, Lord, I get that. I mean, I would come into churches like this one, and I'd have a pastor who is grieved or parents that are grieved. And they'd say, we sent our child to a King James Bible college, and they came back, called us heretics for believing what they believed all their lives. So I started these lessons for grade 11 and grade 12. It took me 3 years to write the first year, grade 11. And just the graphics, just the four-color graphics were $5,000. So I had the graphics done. I had these things all ready to go. I go to a printer. And I gave them to him, and I said, you know, here's how many copies I want. Here, I showed him what I wanted, told him how I wanted it done. And he said, okay. He said, I'll call you in about 2 or 3 weeks for the price. And I told my wife, I said, brace yourself. I said, I mean, four color printing is expensive printing, guys. And I said, brace yourself. I know this guy's going to tell me these are going to cost $24,000. Don't ask me why. We didn't have $24,000. But I said, I just know that's what he's going to tell me. And so the guy called me 3 weeks later and he said, here's what you want, right? And yep. And it was everything I wanted. And he said, okay, so how much? He said, $47,000. I said, $47,000. And you know what I said? Now, here's how I think. Now, we didn't have $24,000, let alone $47,000. But here's how I think. I've been working on them for 3 years. You know what that means? That means for 3 years, young people have graduated from high school and gone to a Bible college with no defense. Now that they're done, they're not going to sit on the shelf and wait for me to get the money. So I said, print them. Print them. Guys, I'm telling you, I don't even know how the money came in, but it was all paid for. Of course, they are... You do notice I'm in Canada. I am a very wanted evangelist in the United States. I mean, there's different ways to define that wanted. But you know, here's the thing. 47 and 5,000, you know what that was? $52,000. When we were just married, we needed $52 faith. We couldn't have handled $52,000 faith. Do you understand? But 30 years later, we had $52,000. You know why? Because now we had 30 years of building our faith up. You know what you need to do? Young people, listen, don't get everything the day you get married. Get the couch in your uncle's basement. I know the one that when you sit down, all of a sudden your clothes are wet and mice go somewhere else to live. But get that and start out needing little bitty faith. Because then you'll strengthen it and strengthen it. Because you can strengthen your faith. But guys, you cannot strengthen yourself against temptation. It's called temptation. And did the Lord say, pray that God will strengthen you against temptation? Come on, did he say that? No. What did he say? Lead me not into it. I'm going to give you some advice about temptation. every single day. I would advise every single day, start your day by saying, please, Lord, please don't lead me into temptation. Do you understand there have been people that they woke up that day in love with the Lord Jesus Christ with a desire to serve Him, and by sundown their life was ruined? Not because they got up with some plan of sin that they put in action. Not because they had some illicit desire. Because they woke up that day saying, boy, today's the day I am really going to do. No, you know, something they thought today was going to be just like yesterday and just like the day before. They did not know that that day they would pass through temptation and would not get through. So you know what you need to do? According to the Lord, your Savior told you every day, ask your Father, please lead me not into temptation. There is a second thing you can do about temptation. Don't lead yourself. Don't lead yourself into temptation. You know what you are tempted to do. Don't put yourself in temptation's way. You know, when our in our Air Force, when one of our fighter bombers, when they're going to cross into enemy territory, they have amongst the screens on the panel of the cockpit is a computer generated topographical map of where they're flying. And so they can see hills and mountains and ridges and everything. And on that that topographical map, you know what they'll see? They'll see a little yellow dish, a little circle. And over here is a solid yellow circle. And over here is a solid yellow circle. You know what those are? Those solid yellow circles represent the radar sweep of an enemy anti-aircraft radar. And what that yellow circle tells this guy is, it is sweeping an area this big, and it's yellow because it's not picking anything up. It doesn't know you're here. Now, here's that yellow circle. If that pilot takes that fighter across into that circle, that radar will go around one time, bounce off that plane, get received back at that radar station, and suddenly from yellow, that will change red. That circle on his council, the one that picks him up, will go from yellow to red. That red does not mean he's going to get shot down. That red means he could get shot down. Now, do you know what his orders are when he takes that mission? Let me tell you what his orders are not. His orders are not, hey, when you go and bomb the enemy, see how many of those yellow circles you can turn red and still get home. You know what they'll say? You know what they tell him? When you see a yellow circle here, and you see a yellow circle here, you know what you do? You fly here. Don't lead yourself into temptation. You know, everybody here knows what they're tempted to do. I'm not into this stand up, confess sins to everything. I don't want to hear about your dirty laundry. I don't want to hear about what goes through your mind or anything else. But if everybody here stood up and said, here's what I'm tempted to do. I am going to share temptation with you. I mean like... was this yesterday? This was either yesterday or the day before. It was a temptation. It was a terrible temptation. Almost gave in. I'd just eaten like a Baptist. And I was at the pastor's house. We were in Alberta. And there was a Tim Horton glazed donut. And it somehow knew my name. And called to me in a very feminine voice. Come to me. Guys, I didn't need that donut. Now you say, oh, that's a little thing. I'm tempted. I didn't give in. I didn't need it. I didn't need it. In fact, I've still got it in my suitcase. But here's what I'm telling you. If we all stood up and said this, here is what I'm tempted to do, we'd be shocked. Oh, yeah, I mean, there'd be some things that just be deplorable. But then there'd be some, I mean, could you imagine if somebody said, yeah, pray for me because I'm tempted to eat a dozen Tim Hortons donuts? If somebody stood up and said, that's my temptation, someone would go, whoa, wish that's all I had to worry about. Right? But what I'm saying is that everybody here, you know what you're tempted to do. I always say it this way, if you are a recovering gambler, don't retire to the Las Vegas area. Really, that's not the place to go. You say, well, I won't go down on the strip. It doesn't matter. You'll go to a grocery store and walk past a dozen one-armed bandits in the grocery store. You'll go to the gas station and walk past three of them there, but you probably won't walk past. You'll say, well, I just don't understand it. I just gave in. That's because you went where you knew you'd be tempted. Hey, if you are a recovering alcoholic, I wouldn't go to a bar and buy the hamburger. Because it might be the best hamburger in town, but it's going to have a problem with, you're going to have a problem with temptation. Don't lead yourself into temptation. I call leading yourself into temptation a stroll through a minefield. You might make it through, and then you might blow off a leg. I knew of a guy. He would go into this man's house. This man would go to work, and every day after his wife went to work, this guy would come and spend 3 hours with his wife. You say, what? Oh, you know what they did? Actually, I do know what they did. They talked about sports. That's all they did. Not to me, 3 hours talking about sports is as close to sin as you can get. But you say, well, then what was wrong with that? I'll tell you what was wrong with that. That was a violation of the verse in the Bible that says to abstain from the appearance of evil. See, if you go into a bar and you buy a hamburger and a Coke, and you do not have a beer, you don't have any kind of whiskey, you don't have any strong drink, and you say, see, I didn't have any effect. When you walk out, that lost guy you work with, you think when he sees you walking out of the bar, he's going to say, I bet they had a hamburger and a Coke. No, it appears evil. And I'll bet you when that guy walked out of that house, I'll bet you the lost neighbor across the street said, bet they've been talking about sports. But see, here's the problem. You go and you talk about sports, and 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 you go and you end up in bed. And you say, gee, how did this happen? This happened the first time. Because you violated the scripture that said to abstain from the appearance of evil, and suddenly you put yourself in the way of temptation and you gave in. I'll show you. This is not my hand. It only looks like my hand. Let me tell you what this is. This is a wooded area. This is a wooded area. It is 2 miles long. That's 95 liters. Okay, so it's 2 miles long and it's 1 mile across. You live here, and the path to your house comes this way, and then 2 miles, 1 mile, 2 miles, 5 miles from here. Although you're only 1 mile away from your house, it is a 5 mile trip. The reason you go around that woods is because in that woods live wolves. I'm not talking about fairy tale wolves. I'm not talking about a myth or a legend. I'm talking about wolves that you have seen, that you know of people who having been killed by them. I mean, there are legitimate wolves. Wolves, that's the Greek word for politician. Anyway, and so this woods is full of wolves. And so no matter what, you know what you've always been told? You never cut through the woods. You come here, and you go two, safe way home. But tonight, you're running late. And it's going to be dark in about 2 hours, and it's going to be raining. I mean, really, it's thunder and lightning off on the horizon. And inside about 15 minutes, you're going to get it. So maybe if I am real careful, I can get across that woods. So you start across that woods. You know what happens? Nothing. You don't get killed by a wolf. You don't see a wolf. You don't hear a wolf. You don't see a wolf footprint. I mean, nothing. See? But you know what you just did? You just violated that principle of abstaining from the appearance of evil. And here's why. The next time you come home, and it's not getting dark, and there's no rainstorm, you know what you're going to say? Gee, it's 5 miles from here. But I went across there before nothing happened. I'll be real careful. And then if you're a Christian, you'll even rationalize this way. And I'll get home, and I'll have 4 extra hours. I'll read my Bible. So you know what you do? Take the shortcut. And the next time, you take the shortcut. Pretty soon, this is no longer the shortcut. This is the way home. And then one day, you get halfway across, and you get killed by a wolf. Say, how did that happen? It happened the first time. Guys, I am telling you, don't lead yourself into temptation. Say, what are you talking about? I guess I would say this. Gentlemen, maybe 1 o'clock in the morning is not a good time to surf the internet for real estate deals. Okay? I mean, that just might not be the best time. So first, I do this every day. Ask God, please lead me not into temptation. Second, don't lead yourself into temptation. Third, now I want to say this on behalf of the men. Guys, there are times in our lives when we have to take a stand. I don't think you always have to take a stand. I can't get over guys that will die for everything. I'll die for that. I'll die for that. Oh, I'll die for that. I mean, you know, there are some guys that are just ready to die. I got bad news for you. You can only die once. You can't near have as many convictions as you think. But I'm telling you, there's a time, guys. There's a time when you've got to take a stand, stand your ground. Don't give an inch. Face your adversary, whether fearful or fearless, but you have got to take a stand and don't be moved. But when you're tempted, that is not the time. If you find yourself tempted, run like a coward. That is the best thing. I mean, you are minding your own business. You know, it's out of the inventory now, the F-117. The F-117 was a stealth fighter, and it was not picked up on radar. And they shot one down. And the way they shot one down is they got two crisscrossing radar patterns, but you know what they did? When they thought it was coming, they had these turned off. And when they both came on at the same time, suddenly this guy found himself in the middle of a red circle. Pow, they nailed him. That's what I told you. You can fall into temptation. You're minding your own business. All of a sudden, man, the radar comes on. You're smack dab in the middle of the red spot. You know what you do? Get outside the sphere of influence as fast as you can. Run like a coward. Guys, somebody wants to attack your wife or steal your kids or whatever, you take a stand. If you got to die defending them, then die defending them, okay? But when you find yourself tempted, that is not the time to say, I'm going to take a stand. No. Run like a coward. We all know about Joseph and Potiphar's wife. Do you really believe for a second that Joseph was the first person that that woman ever propositioned? I've always thought that around Potiphar's household and the servants, I'll bet they had a word for her. I'll bet her nickname was Easy. You say, yeah, but Joseph ran. You ever think he ran because he wanted to stay? Maybe he wanted to stay. So he ran. Now, if you just said, well, yeah, but he got blamed for it anyway, that's okay. Yeah, but they lied about it. Oh, yeah. You want them to lie about you, trust me. I don't know why people get upset when people lie about it. People lie about me, man, I am so thrilled. I love it when people lie about me. There's a guy on the internet right now. If you go to his website, he says this. Sam Gipp says, if you don't speak English, you can't be saved. I know. Somebody told me it was there. I went to his website. Sure enough, it said, Sam Gipp says, if you don't speak English, you can't be saved. What do I care? I speak English. No, I don't. I tell you. Those Quebecers got to worry about it. But you know what? That's a lie. I've never said that because I don't believe that. You say, well, then he lied about you. Yes. Aren't you mad? No, I'm thrilled. When somebody lies about you, I think a lie is the greatest compliment somebody can give you. Because here's why this guy put that on the internet. Because he doesn't like me. He looked me over as closely as he could and couldn't find anything bad about me that was true. So he made something up and he lied. Guys, that's a compliment. And you would rather have somebody lie and say you did something you didn't do than do it. Oh, I know what some of you guys are going to say. Oh, but if I run, oh, my friends are going to, they're going to laugh at me. Yeah, they're going to laugh at you. They sure are. They're going to call you wimp. They're going to call you mama's boy. They're going to call you coward. They're going to call you all kinds of things. But if you think that's tough, you stay and give in. And that very same crowd will call you far worse things and it'll be true. So when you find yourself in temptation, I am telling you, you get out the door. I mean, you head out double time running. Don't look back. Don't wait. When somebody says, wait a minute. No, I'm not waiting for anything. I'm out of here. Because you may give in and you will be in trouble. But there's something else I want to talk to you about temptation. And you really need to get this down. Look at Hebrews chapter 4. Hebrews chapter 4. Hebrews chapter 4, look at verse 14. It's talking about the Lord Jesus Christ, and it says, seeing then that we have a great high priest which is passed into the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, Let us hold fast our profession. For we have not an high priest which cannot be tempted with touched with the feelings of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin. I don't know if you understand the weight and the revelation of that verse. Again, don't raise your hand, but I'm telling you, I am talking to I'll bet in some point every single person here has been tempted to do something since you've been saved. You have been tempted to do something that was despicable, that was perverted, that was illegal, that was vile. You don't even want anybody to know that you thought about it, that you were wanting to do it. You don't even want anybody to find that out. And you know what you do? You beat yourself like you did it. That verse just told me that to be tempted to sin is not sin. Doesn't it say Jesus Christ was tempted in all points like as we are? What? Yet without sin. Then being tempted to sin is not sin. Right? And you know what some of you do? You go, I can't believe I thought that. I can't believe that I got on the phone and dialed a 900 number, and when I heard the voice on the other side, I hung up. I can't believe it. What do you mean you can't believe it? You better than Jesus Christ? Don't worry, he wasn't dialing 900 numbers. But he was tempted to do something. That's what the verse said, yet he didn't. And here's what we do. When we find ourselves tempted, we beat ourselves like an old Roman Catholic. You beat yourself as though you did it. You know what we do? Didn't that verse say in James chapter 1, verse 12, that if you endure temptation, it's a victory? And that you have earned what? The crown of life, correct? So if you've ever been tempted to do something and didn't do it, that's a victory. Why are you turning into a defeat? Why do you beat yourself? I can't believe it, preacher. I just can't believe what I almost did. I can't believe what went through my mind. Whoa, whoa, whoa. But it went through. It didn't stay. And then we hear about somebody else who was tempted. Now, let me tell you this. I might have been coming back from Brother Williams on this. I was over preaching in New Zealand and Australia, New Guinea, and I was flying back on a Qantas flight from Australia. I don't often fly Qantas. This might be the only time. We just gear up out of Sydney, and the pilot comes on and says this. This Qantas pilot says, ladies and gentlemen, it's like a 15-hour flight to L.A. All drinks are free. All booze is free. I don't know if that's a Qantas policy. I don't think they were celebrating, you know, the pilot's birthday, or he was just mad at the company trying to break him. I don't know. But all drinks were free. Now, guys, let me tell you something. I haven't had a drink in 40 years. I got saved over 40 years ago. I haven't had a drink. I might still like it for all I know, but I'm not out to find out. And I'm telling you, it wasn't very long where it was like an aerial party dorm, a college dorm party. I mean, everybody on the plane, just about everybody was sloshed. I mean, they were all just tipping them, drinking them. Now, I didn't have a drink. I really didn't. Now, this part is true. Now, I'm going to tell you the part. I'm going to make something up. What if I told you this? What if I told you what I just told you about that flight? And I said, you know, Lord, I'd sure like a drink. And, you know, I mean, if I have one of those little brown bottles of booze, I'm not going to drive. And certainly the effects will be off of me by 15 hours. And it's free, so I'm not using your money. I mean, don't we always have a spiritual way to justify it? What if I told you that I called the flight attendant over and I got me one of those bottles of booze and I got me something to mix it with and I poured it into the cup and I said, man, I've really wanted this for a long time. And I put it down. What if I told you that whole flight, all I did was fight the urge to take that booze? No, I didn't. Trust me, I didn't. I didn't get any booze. I wasn't interested in any booze. I really wasn't. But if I told you that that happened, some of you, when this message is over, would go to that preacher and go, you let somebody like him preach? You let him preach? In our church, you let him preach? And you go, yeah. Did you hear what he almost did? Did you hear what he almost did? Well, I just want to let you know, I almost killed you once too. That was my real temptation. My real temptation was to drill you a good one. But I didn't do it, so it's not a sin. But guys, that's what I'm telling you. What I'm telling you is that some of you have been tempted to do some horrible thing. You really have. I mean, you may have even begun to think about carrying something out. And you said, I can't do this. But then you're shocked. Shocked that I could think such a thing. What do you mean? You're a walking, talking dirtball that the Bible describes as desperately wicked. Why would you be shocked to find out that you're desperately wicked? But I know this. Jesus Christ was tempted just like you and me, yet without sin. So if you have been tempted to do some terrible thing and did not do it, then would you try counting that as the victory that the Bible calls it instead of a defeat that the Bible does not call it? Do you understand that if you're sitting, you've been taking this spiritual whip and laying your back open like some old Roman Catholic, and what you ought to do instead is be trying on the crown of life because you earned it by not giving in to what you were tempted to do. Now don't tell somebody, well, you know, I'll tell you what I was tempted. I don't want to hear what you're tempted to do. But I am going to do this for you. How would you like to experience temptation? Would you like to experience temptation? I'm going to tell you how to experience temptation. I mean, if somebody's here, you know, and says, well, you know, I'd just like to know what that feels like to want to do something that you shouldn't do. I'm going to tell you how to do it. Now, well, you look all scared. And your preacher really looks scared. I'm going to say two words. When I say these two words, a bunch of you will understand completely, and the young crowd won't quite get it, and we'll have to explain it to them. If you guys want to understand what it is, if you want to experience temptation, here's the two words. Timeshare. Now, a bunch of you went, oh yeah, went, huh? All right, let me explain what a timeshare is. Let's say that you're going to go to Disney World, and so you want to go to Disney World. Now, I understand that I think a ticket to Disney World is like $100 for a day. That's what I don't know. And so it's going to cost you $200, you and your wife, $200. If you go to Orlando, before you ever get to Disney World, I will guarantee you will see a billboard that says, 2 free tickets to Disney World. Duh. You can't figure that out. Let's go get the free tickets. So now here's what you think. You think you're going to walk in. I mean, some guy's going to put up a billboard and he's just going to hand out, you know, $100 tickets at a hit. And you're going to walk in and say, give me those two tickets. And they go, sure, here you go. And you're going to walk out. It ain't happening. You're going to say, hey, we saw a number here. This place was advertised. You're giving away. Yeah, here's the two tickets right here. Well, good. Can we have those? Yep, you can. But wait a minute. You got to let us talk to you for a few minutes. Actually, it's 90 minutes. And here's what they're going to do. They're going to try to sell you a timeshare. Now, I want you to know timeshares in and of themselves are not bad, evil, sinful, or anything. Here's the process. Here's the concept. A timeshare is like a condo, but you don't rent it. One a week a year, you buy it. It is your property. It's like, why would you rent it for a week for $700 when you can buy it for a week for $10,000? Why did we buy that? Anyway, I'm telling you, that's what it is. That's what it is. I'm going to buy one. I do. I'm going to do it. This time I'm not talking about temptation. I'm going to go buy a timeshare. You know why I want to buy a timeshare? They'll tell you. They'll say, now, you're not renting this. You own this. For these 7 days, this is your own personal property. You own it. It is yours because you bought it. That's what I want. I'm going to buy a timeshare. And my week, I'm going to go in and I am going to paint it purple. And I'm going to take all that soft, icky furniture, and I'm going to bring in bales of hay. And I'm going to set concrete blocks on end, put boards up there for tables. And when they come in and say, what did you do? I said, what did you do? He said, I painted it. Why? It's mine. Well, what about the guy next week? Tell him to paint it. It's his. Well, what about the furniture? I took all that ugly soft stuff and I shipped it over to my cottage on the lake. And you tell the next guy, I'm giving him my furniture. I'm leaving it here free. I want a timeshare so bad. I'm tempted. But anyway. Now, here's what you'll do. You'll say this. Well, I'll just go in and tell them we're not interested. You. I mean, long wood, you know, cardboard stick with lollipop head. You are going to tell a professional salesman, I'm not interested, and his response is going to be, oh, okay, well, then here's the tickets. You think he's never heard that? You think he hasn't been trained when somebody says, we're not interested? You think he's not going to make you interested? Well, maybe you are interested. Let me explain. I mean, you got 90 minutes, and you're going to get the tickets. Well, okay, but just, you know, you're wasting your time. Well, that's okay. Let me waste my time. And he'll say something like this. How do you vacation every year? Well, no, not every year. I'll bet you'd like to. Well, yeah, we sure would. Well, if you had your own condo, you could. If we had our own condo, we could vacation every year. Yeah, but we can't afford it. Oh, yeah, right. He's never heard that before. That'll stop him in his tracks. You know what he's going to do? Oh, no, wait a second. How much are you spending this week? I mean, you're here in the area. You're renting something, right? Yeah. How much does it cost you? Okay. Well, now you see, and I don't know how they figure this out, but it still comes out good. It's like you're paying $700 a week when you could be paying just $50 a day for 365 days. Whoa. And you go, we can't afford it. We can afford it. What? Yeah, right. Well, we don't want a vacation in the same place every year. No problem. You see, these condos that I'm selling you, they are in, we have the red section, white section, and blue section. You guys don't have red and white. Anyway, and the one I'm showing you is in the red section. And because if you get the premium condo, the premium timeshare, you don't have to vacation the same week every year or the same place. Why, your condo here in Orlando, you could trade it for one in Miami next year. You could trade it for one in Acapulco the year after that. You could trade it for one in the French Riviera. Okay. We could go to the French Riviera for just $50 a day for the rest of our lives. I'm telling you the truth. I'm telling you, there's nothing wrong with buying a condo. People buy them and use them, exactly that way. But it's a bad thing if you got so tempted that you gave in. Do you know how great the pressure is? Let me tell you what Kathy and I do. We go in and we say, we're here for the tickets. And they say, well, we got to talk to you. I said, no, we're not going to buy your timeshare. Well, I'm sorry, but no. And I said, we want the tickets, but we're not going to buy your timeshare. Well, yeah, but we have to say, no, it's going to be 90 minutes, right? Yeah, okay. The guy told me, he says, well, you have to stay here for 90 minutes anyways. I said, we brought books. I said, we're going to sit right there, and we're going to read for 90 minutes. While we're reading, because you're not going to sell it to us, so you're wasting your breath and your time. So we'll read for 90 minutes. You get a real person, and you might sell it, and then 90 minutes from now, give us our tickets. So we read for 90 minutes, and then in 90 minutes, we get our tickets. You say, wow, you didn't give in to temptation. No, you don't understand. I didn't enter the sphere. Because if I listened, I might buy it. Even if I went in there saying, I'm not buying this, I might buy it. Because you don't know what you're going to do when you're tempted. Do you know how great the temptation is? When you're done, whether you buy it or not, they don't let you leave. They have a courtyard with some very strong coffee and Tim Hortons. And you have to, like, you have to have re-entry. We went there. We were young at this time, and there was this older couple, at least this older lady sitting there. I mean, she had a cigarette here. She's going, and we sat down at our table. I don't know where her husband was. He was hanging himself on a tree somewhere. I'm serious. We're sitting down with this lady who was, we figure, older and wiser. And I think she was. I'm telling you, I think she was. I don't think they were fools. I said they were older and wiser than we were. And we sat down at the table. And she didn't even know us. And she went, did you buy? And we went, no, we didn't buy. We did. I'm not sure we did the right thing. How can those words come out of somebody more mature than me? Somebody's got more sense than me. You know how? Stepped into temptation and never got out. If you want to experience temptation, just go, oh, whoa, whoa. Orlando's a little way off. You know where some of you can't get past temptation? In Walmart. I'm not anti-Walmart at all. But you know, if we need a loaf of bread, you know where I go for a loaf of bread? Corner gas station. Oh, man, you're paying $25 or 25 cents a loaf more than you would at Walmart. You're right. But you know what I'm buying? A loaf of bread. I'm not buying a loaf of bread. And look at that screwdriver set. Right here by the cash register. You know that smiling guy that hands you the cart when you walk into Walmart? Do you know why he's there? Because I had a Walmart manager tell me, they did a demographic study. If they can put a cart in your hand, if they can put a grocery cart in your hand, you'll on average spend $40. I'll bet you nobody here has ever gone to Walmart and bought a thing. Oh, maybe you went and bought one big thing, like a new washer or something. But most of the time, you go in for one thing and come out with 10. You know why? Oh, look at that, it's on sale. But we don't have the money. No, we don't, but... And now some of you are in debt. You know why? Because you walk right into temptation. See, you thought all temptation had something to do with Playboy Empire. But it might be Walmart's empire. I'm telling you, you would do better to walk into the gas station and pay 25 cents more for the loaf of bread or the gallon of milk or the... You guys don't buy a gallon of milk. Anyway, you do better to go into the corner gas station and pay 25 cents more for a loaf of bread, then go to, well, I'm going to go to Walmart. I'm going to save 25 cents on this loaf of bread. And you're going to spend $90 on other things you didn't need. And if you don't have the money, you're going to charge it because you walked into temptation and couldn't get away from it. Say, what should I do then, preacher? I think you ought to do what the Lord told you to do. I think you ought to every day say, Lord, please, please lead me not into temptation. I think second, you ought to make sure you don't lead yourself into temptation. I think third, you ought to, if you find yourself tempted, run like a coward. But if you have been tempted to do something and you didn't do it, I think you ought to count it as victory. I think, because we Christians, I mean, you know, we are the people that we can find a cloud in every silver lining. We can snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. I mean, we can turn a victory into a defeat. If you have been tempted to do something and did not do it, that was a victory. Such a great victory that your Father said, I'm going to give you a crown for it. And some of you ought to look yourself in the mirror and say, I remember when you thought about doing that. I remember the plan. I remember when you started to put it into action. And I remember when you couldn't go through with it. And that was a victory. Was not a defeat. And take it for the victory that it is. I'd like you to stand with your heads bowed.